Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene, which we are part of Empire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com. I'm Wole, joined by my co-host, Ray Jeezy. Wilty's out. What's going on, homie?
It's good to be in the building. It's a special day. HBCU hockey. I never thought I would hear that term ever.
That's hockey?
Tennessee State. Got a hockey team now. It's the first HBCU team ever. Hockey team ever.
Wow.
First HBCU to have a hockey team. And it's the only college hockey team in the state of Tennessee. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
We grew up watching movies. Remember the Titans, Glory Road.
Yeah.
Also,
Ducks.
The Mighty Ducks is not count. That, see, you being funny, man.
I know you're going. My bad. Listen, I apologize. Go ahead.
The Mighty Ducks is fictional.
It's a classic. Go ahead.
For some people. But The Great Debaters. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Slim, who used to be on
Are you thinking about the girls?
The lights and girls.
Yeah, Smollett.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not why I asked though.
But
the Great Debaters, you know the story.
I know the story of it. You said
Wiley College. Exactly. I'm just saying, like, this is historic. It goes along with that. Like, gotcha. We're living to see this. That's
we're
my point.
Life.
This
we're
dude
life.
Brings up the Mighty Ducks, and then he brings up just the girl. You know what? I'm done. I tried, people.
I agree. Look, I'm with you. The history. This is history.
So I'm watching HBCU just media today, streets, and people are excited. People are going to already want Tennessee State hockey jerseys because it's so historic.
That's dope. I wouldn't want one too. I would want one.
I believe you.
I'm dead serious.
I believe you.
Yeah, thank you. Because I would want one.
I actually may
look it up right now.
You should. Yeah. So I don't know if they're pre-selling them. They have a design already. It's dope. So of course they're not going to be able to compete right away.
Yeah, that's how it
normally is. It's still in the early stages. However, this is historic. It's going to be a movie about this, especially. Just imagine. Fast forward 5-10 years from now.
Uh-huh.
They advance to, I don't know how it works, the Frozen Four. That's what it's called. I know you're laughing because it's hockey. I know you're laughing. But I'm just saying, just imagine, that's a big deal. That's where a company like Paramount will step in and say, you know what, we want to do a movie on this team, a documentary. It's coming. It's going to be amazing that we're living through this. And I'm loving the fact that we get a chance to actually report on it.
That's true,
I'm excited about it. It's a big deal.
We get somebody to interview now. That's what's up. We got somebody to talk to about some hockey. That's good. I'm for that. HBCU corner, man.
I'm interested to see how it all plays out because as of right now, like for example, if you look at some if you look at some HBCU baseball teams, bowling teams, it's a mixture. It's not just black folks. Because some people are saying, you know what, black folks, when they take over a sport, they take over. You know, I'm just saying, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So hockey though is different.
Yeah.
I don't know too many black hockey players.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how it's going to impact the community, young people. Are they going to want to play now? Say, you know what? I can go to Tennessee State. I don't know. So it's gonna be dope to see how this all evolves.
We haven't taken over baseball. So, I mean, it's like these schools have a mixture.
A lot of the greatest players in history are black.
They are. Not saying, I'm talking about in terms of like, it's not the majority. That's my guy.
It's not the majority.
You know what I mean?
Sure. In basketball and football, it's definitely the majority. I agree.
You're talking like, taking over. That's what I'm looking at.
The greats.
Yeah, but it is what it is.
Anyway, Empire Media hosts multiple DMV podcasts,
shows
such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders, Insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones.
Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene.
And also, make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content.
And don't forget, you can hit us up on social media on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
Hey, also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene. Sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T's not here, but I'll say his thing. Let's get into our tradition. The pregame, here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Wizards drafting Bilal Coulibaly. Also, the Wizards drafting, trading for Jordan Poole and Tyus Jones. I always want to say Tyus Young for some strange reason. I don't know why. Tyus Jones. Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with CIAA Commissioner Jackie McWilliams. Ray, you can hit us up first.
All right, with the 8th pick in the NBA draft, the Washington Wizards selected Bilal Coulibaly, as you just said. What are your thoughts on the pick, and who do you compare his game to? My goodness, we're going here already. This is hilarious.
Yeah, I feel like you have. This is the thing now. This is the thing. Like you have because to, I don't want to do what everybody else is doing. I want to do something different.
Like, well, no. Because the joke that night was the Wizards drafted Giannis and
yeah, I'm not saying he's not
and
Giannis.
Jokic.
He's not Giannis. No, I've really watched him. Like this morning, I went on multiple clips and I was like, who does he compare it to? And I try to break down things that I saw. And what I didn't see, that's why I could tell. If I didn't see it, I know you're not able to do it as easily as others. But he reminds me of his comp for me would be like Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, he'll be like Andrew Wiggins. Like he's a guy who can play, he can defend. Not a guy that at this particular point has an awesome jump shot, like a pull-up J, but is decent enough. He has to quicken up his jumper. But he does everything well. I think he plays with, compared to some of the dudes we've seen in Washington, like the guys they drafted recently, I'm going to use Denny Avdija because that's a guy who's an overseas player. He plays with more of an edge. Like he's ready to bang on you. He's a slasher. He's a true slasher. Great, like I said, good defender. His dribbling is getting better. I've seen him in his 2021, 2022, his handle is much better. He has a nice crossover. He's just smooth. He's a very smooth player. When you look at him, he fits the role of a basketball player. You could say, you know what? You can play here. Because he plays tough. He plays big. He's not scared of contact. I think he can definitely project it somebody special. So I have to comp him. It'd be like an Andrew Wiggins. But I do think there's room for him to improve. Definitely.
I don't have to compare him to somebody. You did a great job of describing his game. Also, making a comparison that makes sense. Andrew Wiggins, same height, very similar athlete.
He's six, and their arms are both long.
Yep.
Too.
So I agree with that. Here's my question, and here's my thought process. Who's going to be the right coach for him? Wes Unseld Jr. is not the coach of the future in Washington.
I don't know. It's hard.
It's amazing that in Phoenix, their owner wasn't playing. When he came in, he cleaned house. Here in Washington, there's a brand new regime. Not a new owner, but there's a brand new regime. And Wes Unseld Jr. is not going to be here. I can tell you that right now. I don't know if it's going to be next season, mid-season, but he's not going to be here. So you want to get a coach long-term that's going to develop this kid and then ultimately teach him how to play winning basketball in the NBA in the United States of America. And I watch guys like Jason Kidd, who wherever they coach at, whether it be an assistant or a head coach, they develop talent. And Jason Kidd is somebody who I would love to be a coach here. Now, I'm thinking that Jason Kidd, with the team he has, Mark Cuban's not going to give him much more time. I'm just thinking that Jason Kidd might be somebody who could potentially be a Wizards head coach in the future. He's the right guy to me to come in and develop. But that's what I want to ask you, and also want to put that out there for our listeners. Who will be the right coach to now coach this new Wizards team?
See, I like Wes Unseld Jr. I just like him.
I like him too.
I think he's a bad coach. I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he was forced to play his system with Bradley Beal. I think he was forced to do what Bradley does best. Try to make him a dribbler, which wasn't his best thing. I feel like you're going to get to see what Wes Unseld Jr. can do as a coach this season. Last season, I don't think you – with Bradley Beal, you can't really tell because you now demand – because you said it, you know, because you've seen it. Like, Tommy Shepard wanted Bradley Beal. Like, that was his thing. Like, he wanted Bradley Beal. He wanted to build around Bradley Beal. So, but Wes Unseld Jr. comes from a place in Denver, which is totally different. It's not – it doesn't really tailor to what Bradley Beal does. It tailors to more ball movement from the big pass and this, that, and the other. So we're going to see now how Wes Unseld Jr. has the opportunity to build his brand as a coach. I know a lot of people are saying we're going to talk about it later, like, okay, Jordan Poole's going to come here and get to do whatever he wants to do, right? But Jordan Poole doesn't have the cliche and the cash and the, like, the brand of a Bradley Beal. Like, he can't come in and say, I'm going to do what I want to do, right? He doesn't have that brand. He's not an all-star. You know what I mean? Like, he's an NBA champion, but he's not an all-star. So in this situation, I want to see what Wes Unseld Jr. can do. But I will go back to something you did say. Jason Kidd would be perfect. I'm not sure if Cuban will let him go because I think Jason Kidd not too long ago got into the Western Conference Finals. So it depends. It all depends on what with their best player, the one that cries all the time, their best player.
Who?
Dallas's best player.
Oh, Luka.
Luka. It's all depending on what Luka wants to do. If Luka doesn't like Jason Kidd, then Jason Kidd is
gone. I was just throwing his name out there. He doesn't have to
necessarily. No, I like Jason. I think it's the good one. I'm just speaking
of someone who develops players. That's what Washington's going to need. I don't care what Wes Unseld accomplishes, per se. I just think that he's not the guy.
It's possible.
Right now, but with all the changes, I see that being one of the next big changes or adjustments that Washington as a franchise makes, is they're going to find a new coach. Mm-hmm. Now, you said we'll get to see the real Wes Unseld. At times, when Kyle Kuzma was out as well, we saw ball movement. We saw people like Rui Shine. But we also saw Kyle Kuzma be ball dominant and take bad shots. And again, that falls on coaching. And also, that's the true. Wizards have not made leaps and bounds defensively since he's come on, even though that was supposed to be his MO. So, with the way the roster is now being constructed, with this being an official rebuild, what do you expect from the Wizards next year? They're going to be a lottery team, do you think?
Yeah, no.
Okay,
definitely.
If they're a lottery team, there's no reason he needs to be here.
See, that's the question. That's the thing. You already they want to be a lottery pick,
right?
So how is it any coach that comes here isn't going to be productive because they want, this is the goal. The goal is to pretty much have this thing look terrible, get number one picks, get like first five, like top five picks. So to me, I think because they blew it up, Wes has like more of a leash, because if they lose, it's what they want. It's not like they're giving him the pieces to be very competitive.
If you brought Wes in, I would agree with you. Yeah. It's just like Orlando was rebuilding and they brought in Mosley.
You sort of bringing in their guy.
And they're giving him time to build it.
Gotcha.
But in this case, they inherited Wes, who
there you go. That's a good point.
Tommy wanted Wes as well.
Good point.
Many feel like Wes wouldn't have got the job if it wasn't for his last name, unfortunately. Because Unseld, the name in the organization.
I agree. I kind of agree with that.
However, here's the thing. If that's the case, if we're just a household organization, so to speak, if that makes sense, if the Wizards are, then Bobo should be on the squad. And people talk about Wimby, right? Number one overall pick, and they compare him to Bobo. Like, why? Bobo slipped in the draft, right?
Man.
And he was available for Washington. Washington took Admiral Schofield, who they later traded. Yep. It made no sense. Tommy Shepard was the most, I tell you, interesting dude. And then he would make a move like, oh, great, you bring in Porzingis, but you already messed up so many times. So he hired Tommy Shepard, who left a stain on his organization, called a no-trade clause, which was dumb. Uh-huh. And from what I read, that might be the last no-trade clause in history that Tommy Shepard gave to Bradley Beal out of all people. So at this point, if you want to get rid of that old Washington Wizards just tradition and decision making, just everything about that old regime, I think that Wes Unseld Jr. is on borrowed time. But I could be wrong. What you're saying makes sense to some degree. Like, okay, they're not gonna be good anyway. So what are the expectations? What are the coaches looking for in him? Because let's just say he overachieves, because we can transition to the veterans that are on the roster now.
Yeah.
This is what Tyus Jones wanted. He wanted to be a veteran starting point guard on a team. That concerns me, because I'm like, do you really want to win? I'm cool personally if I'm a backup somewhere, as long as I'm winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can take it back to college. When I played with y'all, we didn't win, right?
Yeah,
but your brother was winning, and he's like, you can play with me. You can be on the bench. I'm like, bet. Till you talk me out of it. So I'm cool with coming off the bench, playing my role, and being on a good team. The Grizzlies, up until Ja started to have his behavioral issues, of course, or off the court issues, they looked like a potential contender.
Yeah.
They were supposed to have this budding rivalry with the Golden State Warriors and compete for championships.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they had some setbacks, but they still have a young roster. David Roddy's on that roster. Kenny Lofton Jr. They got some good pieces
to do it.
So it's like, why would you want to leave that where you got a chance to actually win, to come to Washington? Like, are you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
However, this is what he wanted. So maybe they overachieve under the leadership of a Tyus Jones. I don't know. But what is the expectations now with these new veterans coming in? And Jordan Poole, I guess you can call him a vet. Jordan Poole is somebody who I think can help develop young people too. Why? Or young talent? Because he was in the G League.
Jordan Poole?
Yeah.
Oh, he's bucking his buckets, bro. I don't know if he's developing anybody. But I do think he's going to get his numbers. He's going to get his numbers. I feel like
a fresh start was needed for him.
Yeah, a fresh start. But I do think that you can get a clip on what Jordan Poole is about if you just watch the Warriors play and what they're trying to accomplish and what he's trying to accomplish at the same. And this, truth be told, this is after the championship. I think enduring that, to your point, Ray, I do think in the first, when they won the chip, he was more about trying to play. He was more about what they were trying to do. Year two was something totally different. Now, we can say, after, like, last season, we can say Yeah, it could have been about. It could have been what happened in the off season, right? That played a part. We can say that, but I'm not trying to put all that out there. Like, I don't want to do that. I think that's kind of dirty. I think a lot of people are kind of throwing it out there just to be dirty. But if you're looking on the court, it wasn't about team with Jordan Poole. Especially if you watch the finals you watch the playoffs and seeing situations, and even the Lakers series, to be honest with you, situations where it's trying to make the winning play, it was more about making a Jordan Poole play. And I think that, and if we're talking about playing winning basketball, that's not winning basketball. Like, we see this with other players that I'll give you another example. Watch the Houston Rockets play and watch old boy Green. I think he's a dog, but watch how he play. He ain't playing winning basketball. Ain't about winning. It's about getting mine. Jordan Poole is in a similar situation. It's about getting mine. I mean, I'm not saying that Green can't learn how to play winning basketball. I'm just saying that they are very comparable in terms of what the mindset's about. Because you watch a scoring team like you watch Devin Booker, when he started feeling how to win, I would make the argument that, like, he understood more than how to play winning basketball. Like, it was like, I can score, but I want to play winning basketball.
So which one is it going to be? Is he going to come in and do what he wants? Is he going to be this player that doesn't play winning basketball? Or is he going to listen and fall in line because he's not an all-star, like you said before?
I think he's going to try to get his.
Okay, so if that's the case, Jordan Poole is expendable.
Very.
It's not a big deal.
If you're rebuilding.
This was just a move because you needed to rebuild.
I agree.
The Washington Wizards took the best deals that they could get for what they were offering other teams. A lot of Wizards fans, and I've talked to some people in the media who were saying this is dumb. They didn't get any first round picks back. I agree. They should have landed some first round picks. If Marcus Smart was worth two, you should have got at least one first round pick with all the picks you made. However, many also on the flip side say the Wizards overvalue Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis, and they weren't worth what people think they are. So this is the hand that the Wizards now currently are dealt with, but they got a slew of second round picks.
And they also have an
expectation, and they have a plan for how to rebuild over the next 3 to 5 years. Jordan Poole, in my opinion, really, he's not necessarily part of the long-term plans. This is just somebody that you brought in. He's somebody that you brought in for that reason. Now, if you watched, going back to Jordan Poole and his mentality, I want to ask you a question too after this. After they won that championship, you saw Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole in the locker room, and they both looked at each other and said, "You about to get the bag." Andrew Wiggins looked back to him and said, "You about to get the bag." He said, "We about to get the bag." You know, they started laughing. The whole mentality changed. And this dude that was trying to prove himself from being a G Leaguer and showing he belonged to the league, who worked his butt off to get there, now mentally, I'm a star now. I'm about to get paid. I'm a champion. And you mentioned a word about Ed Reed, off the air, entitlement. That seeped in. And I don't know about all the off the court stuff. Is everybody talking about, is he going to Rose Bar? Is he going here? Is he known for partying or something?
Yeah, supposedly.
Really?
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff. He tried to get – there's some rapper chick he tried to pay a bag to date him or do whatever.
Oh, wow.
That's out there. And some dude got her for free. I don't know.
So you saw the Cameron interview about how he was saying you money green, you bro, all this other stuff. Now, if that's true – and there were so many leaks in the Golden State Warriors that I wouldn't be shocked if it's true. If he's behaving in that manner, if he's, you know, coming at his teammates – then maybe that punch was a wake-up call for him.
Versus a bad thing, maybe
it was a wake-up call for him. Maybe it pissed him off to the point where he said, you know what? He couldn't shake it he never wanted to be part of that team no more.
He deleted Draymond like right after off social media.
I would have too, but my thing is this. Because in my mind, we talked to, shout out to Coach Angelo Hernandez, who he coached Jonathan Kuminga. He said Jonathan Kuminga was the most talented duty coach.
Yeah.
That's who I wanted from the Warriors, to be real. Yeah. I didn't want no Jordan Poole.
But see, again,
but the Warriors weren't going to let him go.
Yeah, they weren't
but Poole
let him
was
go.
Expendable because of what you said.
Yeah.
So now he's on a new team.
Yeah.
He's not the leader of the team. If anybody's going to be a leader right now, it's going to be Tyus Jones, unfortunately.
Because he's actually a solid leader. Because he's a person that everyone talks about. Everyone says that he should be a starter in the league. They say he's the best backup in the NBA. Backup point guard.
We were together. We covered the Timberwolves. Was I with you? You've covered the Timberwolves before. Yeah. I covered them with the Round Ball Report.
Yeah.
And Jamal Crawford in the locker room said Tyus Jones is a starting point guard.
Yeah, everyone says it. Everyone says it.
He's a bit undersized. I know you do. I actually like his game too. He's a true point guard.
Yeah, he's a true point guard.
And he shoots a little over 40% from three.
He does everything well that you need for a point guard.
So and he's always been like that since high school.
Since,
So he's the leader on the team, not Jordan Poole.
Yeah.
Now, without there being necessarily a true leader, though, we're trying to figure out who the leader is.
Yeah.
Does that necessarily play a role in Jordan Poole and how he comes into this franchise and how he approaches the game and all? Again, Wes Unseld Jr., that's going to be a challenge for him, is can he corral a young team and get him to focus? A lot of people are making jokes like this is basically the Capital City Go-Go with a couple guys. So,
oh, it ain't that bad.
Well, again, people. Again, you know, the streets are talking. But
you gotta watch basketball,
the true evaluators and the true Wizards fans are knowing and believing that now with good decision makers, you actually have a GM, you actually have a president of basketball operations, thankfully, and they're coming from winning situations where they've proven that they can bring in talent. It's gonna be all right over time.
They're doing everything right, man.
They're
doing everything like. All right, I understand like people pissed off about like Bradley Beal not getting this amount of draft number one picks, bruh.
That was on Brad.
That was on Brad.
He controlled that.
Also, this is not this regime's fault. Like,
oh no, not
they should have made that trade a couple years ago. Like they should have made that trade when it was offered to him a couple years ago.
Dude, they could have been offloading him.
Yeah.
But here's the thing though, there were at least two franchises, including Miami Heat, who said waive that no trade clause and we'll give the Wizards. This and a number one, they could have got Tyler Hero and a number one pick.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, they couldn't give a hero because they wasn't trying to give a hero. They kept saying it.
So Kyle Lowry and somebody else in number one pick.
Oh no, they could have got Duncan Robinson. Duncan.
Okay.
Duncan.
And a number one pick.
Which is good.
He wouldn't waive it though.
Yeah, he would waive it.
He made his decision that I want to go to Phoenix. He controlled it because he had that control. So people should know that. And a lot of people know that anyway. Yeah. It's just everything else. They don't understand letting Porzingis go. But Porzingis could have walked for nothing if the clock goes past midnight.
Was the best trade. I think it was the best trade.
I'm just saying.
You got Tyus Young and Tyus Jones.
It's all good. I said Kyle Lowry.
Tyus Jones in the back end. It's a good trade.
If you wait though, he walks for nothing. Just like Kyle Kuzma's walking for nothing because you didn't trade him when he was. Yeah. People were offering a number one for him.
You did a sign and
right
deal.
Before that.
Yeah. You got to do a sign and trade deal with Kuzma. I mean, Porzingis. He helped you out. You know what I mean? Like you said, they didn't like Porzingis wasn't going to be back. So you actually worked the deal out to a point where, all right. I mean, I think it was opt out. He would have opted out. You worked the deal out where he can stay. You can get something for him. Tyus Jones is a steal to me. I'm sorry, it's a steal. So. To you, right, Ray? You said this is a G League team. Has to have folks.
I didn't say that. No,
you said folks said it was a G League team.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You good?
Are folks so sleep? Are they sleeping on? Because everybody's talking about Poole. I get that. They can talk about Poole. Poole is going to average 20-some points. I believe. I believe it in my heart. He's going to average 20-some points on this team. But are folks sleeping on Tyus Jones, though? I feel like they are like not. They don't understand how good of a point guard this dude is. He can shoot a three. He has a tough floater when he goes to the lane. You know what I'm saying? Like, he gets people involved. He doesn't turn the ball over. He gets so, as a point guard, he kind of checks all the boxes for a point guard.
He does.
You know what I mean? So
It's going to depend on the supporting cast. If guys like Denny and Corey Kispert can hit these open threes, if they can be threats to where you can't have a defense collapsing on the point guard, then, yeah, I think that Tyus Jones will be impactful. But last year, at times, the Wizards were dreadful from three, and they depended and relied on it. So – it all depends on how the team comes together and what they you know turn out to be. But the expectations are high. That should give this team the opportunity to go out and play sort of carefree basketball, knowing that you're continuing to build for the future. The concern is the next 2 years, what is the NBA draft? What is the prospects overseas? What is it going to look like? Because of all the people out there who evaluate this type of stuff are saying – there's not a whole lot of talent in comparison to this year. This is the last good draft for a couple of seasons, according to some people.
It's a real good draft.
This is a pretty good draft. Like I said, Keontae George went, mid-first round, which when he was in 11th grade, many thought he was going to be a top pick.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I feel like next year I'm talking about, like, to me, like Taylor Hendricks could have been.
Next year is the Bonnie James draft.
Wagner draft. That's right.
Yeah, DJ.
Yeah,
well,
better.
I know.
DJ's
but,
way better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just telling you, this is what the media is talking about.
I know.
I've seen Bronny James in person, and we already kind of know what his game is. Yeah. But the Wiz are going to have to become an attractive free agent landing spot as well.
Mm-hmm.
If Tyus Jones were to succeed, that would be huge in terms of landing free agents.
Yep.
So everything, going back to your original questions and our thoughts about the acquisitions – everything comes back to Tyus Jones because he's a pure point guard that can create for his teammates. He can score. If he were to be successful, and let's just say they make the play-in, which is possible.
Yeah, it should.
If they make the play-in,
that'd be horrible. for this team.
It would be.
Yeah.
But because the draft
is. But it'd be good for some of the fans, but it'd be horrible for
Because they're not supposed to achieve. So if they finish ahead of, let's say, Toronto, who's losing their best player this upcoming season, if they finish somewhere around 9 or 10, wouldn't free agents who say, you know what? I want a chance to play, to hoop, and to play winning basketball. Tyus Jones went there, and he did it. Yeah. I want to go to Washington. Is the nation's capital? Because right now, according to many, the nation's capital is a great place to visit, but it's not a great place to want to play basketball, which is stupid.
Yeah,
it's so stupid. There's a lot of a rich culture in basketball and the DMV in general, and it's wild how around the league, people don't want to play here.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, I associate some of that with him because he didn't want to play for a different reason, though. It's the family, the friends, too many people, too many distractions.
Yeah,
had nothing to do with the area itself.
Yeah,
but if you ask him, he'll say, oh, D.C. is a great place for basketball.
He loves his area.
Now, I looked at on YouTube. I went back and I watched Howard when they played Notre Dame. Notre Dame came to Bird Gymnasium. That doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
I'm mixing some HBCU in here. Why did they come here? Mike Bray and his relationship with Blakeney from where? DeMatha.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who was the coach? Morgan Wooten.
The
tree that Morgan Wooten has. I had a chance to interview Dwayne Simpkins. Dwayne Simpkins went to DeMatha. He talked about recruiting to American University. American University. Well, like, when has American University ever made noise in basketball? he's saying that people actually want to come and play in D.C.
Uh-huh.
So the Wizards got to take advantage of the resources, the natural resources right here in the DMV. It can happen.
Yeah, definitely can. I think the Wizards have so much.
And it starts with Tyus Jones, out of new acquisitions. Yeah. Light-skinned guys with curly hair, baby. Let's go.
Hey, yo, like this light-skinned backcourt, man. Something real out there.
With Denny. That's
Elder
a soft team, bro. Corey Kispert.
And Bilal. That's what you got. You got Bilal.
Hey, nobody said it was going to be tough. You said he had the edge, so I said, I'm not going to go there.
No, he got the edge.
I'm just joking. That's the stereotype.
It's real talk, though. Kind of like France, whatever. But no, he actually, he balls. He's way tougher than Gobert. Yeah, he's way tougher than Gobert.
France. We'll see. We'll see.
No, I feel like.
There's no tough guys in the league right now. There's no Artest
or
Garnett.
But I'm saying
Kendrick Perkins. None of those guys are left.
Because, you know, I told
Joe Kim Noah.
When I cover the Wizards and I watch Denny Avdija play, right? I'm like, bro,
he's soft. He's soft.
But when I see
he's a nice kid.
Yeah, nice. He's a nice kid. He's a very nice kid.
Very nice, soft kid.
Yes. There you go. But now when you watch clips, it matches him though. When you watch clips in overseas, it matches what he is. Like it matches. Like when you watch he had Pat and whatever, we like, dang, he got game. He does got game. He has individual skill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But this right here, this heart, it ain't the same. Now that dude Bilal. I'm going for loud. I don't want to say his last name.
It's hard.
Dude got hurt. Like, he played with, like.
Like I said, we'll see.
He played with a different. And he get up.
I like Marcus Smart, his toughness. I think he's one of the tough guys left in the league.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard plays with
edge.
Oh, no,
he's tough. He plays with an edge.
Russ plays with an edge. There's still some guys out there that are going to test your heart.
Yeah. Patrick Beverly plays with an edge.
You can build your team around guys from overseas. Denver just proved it.
Yeah, if you do it the right way.
Therefore.
Yeah.
The Wizards in 3 years can be competing and achieving what will they? Sustainable success. That's the goal.
All right. So last question though.
All right.
All right. So they're in this big rebuild stage. We can all see this. And then they got Tyus Jones. They got Jordan Poole drafted Bilal.
Yes.
Right. All right. So think of the players who are not really being utilized in the NBA that you like. Young players who aren't being utilized. In terms of low risk reward type of thing, should the Wizards go out and take a flyer on them, like via trade?
On
not anybody
in particular.
Yeah, not anybody in particular. Just like how Orlando took a flyer on Markel and now it's panning out, something like that.
Okay, Kobe White is a guy I love.
Okay,
because I think he can run the two.
That's a good one.
And good with Lonzo's status still being in the air now, Chicago is acting like, whoa, we don't know. We should let him go. But Kobe was a top five pick, and the dude can hoop. Yeah. I've seen him. He has good size, handle. Kobe White has put on some muscle since he's been in the league. He's a baller. I would love him.
I like Kobe White. I like him a lot. I think he's underutilized too.
I would love bringing in him. I'm trying to think of any other like top players who haven't necessarily panned out or, you know, just could use a fresh start. Kind of like Tyrese Haliburton came to Indiana and got busy.
Yeah.
And he was balling in Sacramento, but of course they were just crowded.
Yeah.
Like Malik Monk is somebody I love too, but I don't think the Kings gonna let him go now.
Yeah, too expensive. I'm looking like somebody that they can't.
So Kobe White's at the top of my list.
Yeah, that's a good
one. He's somebody I've been eyeing for a while.
I like that one too. So all right, so on our Wizards Nation's Facebook group, Matthew T. Rosenberg said Marvin Bagley. I like that one.
Sure.
That he was really good. He's one of the top high school players coming out. Yeah,
Duke players got a bad rap in the league.
I know, but he was at, if you watch it, when he gets burned. He actually puts up decent numbers. I like that one. Okay. That's low risk, high reward. For me, I mean, I put it out there. Everybody know who I like. It's Bobo. To me, it's Bobo.
Bobo. Well, Orlando's not going to let him go.
Yeah, but they're not utilizing him. Bro, he gets DMP, dude.
Yeah.
I feel like
I like Nasir Little, too. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, Nasir Little's a good one, too. Yeah. Seriously. I think Bobo, to me.
Carolina guys, cuz. That's
my
name.
I see it. I saw it. But I'm like, for me, Bobo ain't even. There's games he gets used, and there's games he doesn't get used. And it's like now, and towards that stretch when they started winning games, he wasn't being used. So I'm like, shoot.
They keep getting more and more guards. I don't understand.
Bruh.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
I'm trying to understand
who's
what
making the decisions there. You got like 4 point guards.
Bruh.
Cole Anthony might be one of the guys because it looked like he might be the odd man out.
Even
Cole Anthony can score.
Cole Anthony's like that. No, he is.
They're not going to let Suggs go.
Yeah. I like Suggs too. You know I like both. I like both, though. I think
another Carolina dude. Yeah, everybody from Carolina out there, just pick him up. There you go. Eric Montrose, baby. No, is he? Oh, shoot.
Eric Montrose is from Carolina.
No, no, I know. I'm just saying. So, there was something about him recently. I don't want to make a joke.
Oh, so he did something?
No, no, no. Let me see. Because I want to be careful. I wasn't being like.
You're saying that something. Oh, I got you. I got you.
Oh, yeah. He has cancer. That's what it
he
is.
He does?
Okay,
oh,
yeah,
damn.
Yeah, yeah.
Prayers up for Eric.
Right. No joke. I mean, that was when we was growing up. You know, Serge Wicker, all those guys.
I just happened
to be a name that came to mind. So anyway, no. Aside from the Carolina, the commonality with these guys, these are. Three guys like Cole Anthony's he's a flat out scorer.
Yeah.
And when he's healthy, I think he can be one of the top guards. You talking about a rebuild with a backcourt with Cole Anthony at the two and Ty Jones at the one? I would love that. And Orlando has some pretty good assets.
They do.
Might as well start to look at guys like that.
That's what I'm saying. Guys that you can trade a second round pick, not a high salary, you can bring them in. I think Cole Anthony is a good one. I think Cole Anthony made the man a lot of money. I think a lot of people do know how good he is. I think when he played, I know the game I watched against the Wizards, he came in and, like, they couldn't do nothing with him.
Nah.
So he's an extremely talented dude.
The market is changing, though. When you got guys like Chris Middleton opting out.
Yeah, true.
In Minnesota, DiVincenzo, Dante, he opted out.
Yeah.
Guys who a few years ago would have easily took those contracts.
Yeah.
Now it's saying we're demanding more. It is going to be harder and harder to sign these guys. That's going to be up to the Players Association. You got to get a handle on this. It's getting ridiculous, man, because so many guys. You talking about Jordan Poole got paid a nice contract.
Yeah.
Draymond Green said, I'm worth $100 million. It's insane the type of money that these guys are demanding today, and it's messing the market up.
Yeah.
So that's why you got to find the Jordan Goodwins of the world. You got to find guys that are going to work hard and want to win. And the money is secondary to them.
Sure.
It's hard to find that. I understand you have to feed your family, but you get so much money today.
Yeah.
Even the worst player on the team
gets
is making
the
money.
Bag, bro.
So, yeah, the guys now with Winger being the chief decision maker, I trust what they're going to do evaluating talent. And you got to get young talent because then they can't demand all that money.
That's what I'm saying. Got to go young. I totally agree.
Kobe White, I think it's great, man, because he's not going to demand a whole lot of money.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not right now.
Nasir Little plays well. Now, if Portland,
I think Kobe White
Portland's trying to blow it up a little bit.
I think Kobe White would demand more money than Nasir Little.
Yeah, I agree
Kobe
with that.
Would. Yeah, so I think I
agree
like
with
Nasir.
That.
Like
he's versatile, Nasir, and he's athletic as all get out, man.
No.
See, this is the thing, man. Tommy Shepard made some poor choices in the past. Rui should be the leader on this team right now,
bruh. Now Lakers about the Lakers press to resign Rui.
Yeah, Rui. Now he's sitting back looking like
yeah.
I got options.
I got options.
That's crazy, and that's my guy, man. I knew
I got options.
I've been trying to tell people for years, and you know this.
Yeah.
And I'll give love to Troy Halliburton. That's my guy.
Yeah.
Me and him, outside of us, and maybe yourself, of course,
yeah.
Because you were talking about him not being used right.
Yeah.
There weren't too many guys that were like advocating for Rui. Some people were hot and cold. If you play well, Rui's a ball. If not, get him out of here. Gonzaga guys are tall.
Yeah.
But he was one of the more consistent guys on the Lakers.
Oh no!
During that playoff run,
definitely, and they started.
And he had the right assistant coaches leading them. Phil Handy's a beast.
And then towards the end of the playoff run, they started utilizing the right way. They got switches on small. He was in the post doing his thing.
All he's got to do, what you talked about earlier, is get their heart. That's what Russ tried to instill in him. He said, dude.
But he was getting it, though. He was getting it,
That's what Russ told him. Russ said, you could be one of the top players in the league if you just had this. He said, have some dog in you.
He was getting it, though.
But he still deferred at times, man.
Now the Lakers, though. Now the Lakers.
Now I'm talking about here, unfortunately.
But, again, it could be, again, to your point, mate. I mean, as much as I like Wes Unseld Jr., That could be an issue for Wes. Like he didn't give him the ball and say go rock with it. It was still deferring to Brad and all that.
6'8", athletic, can defend.
I mean,
he just got to be a more consistent rebound. That's the only knock I ever had on him. But now, with that dog, you don't have to handle that Kawhi does. But that was a comparison
don't need
coming
that,
out.
Though.
Nope.
We don't need that.
No, I'm just that was a comparison.
That's what I'm saying,
But he can still score buckets,
bro. You don't need that. That's what I'm saying. Like he could get the pat that everybody's looking for him to do what Kawhi does, like to go to the rack. He don't need all that. If he keep working on it, he can have a freaking
like Brown type pat.
No. I don't even talk about his Jay. DeRozan, mid-range DeRozan type junk. Because he got the mid-range. He a mid-range assassin.
Turn around,
bro, like I'm saying, like he don't need that much, for real, to score 20. Real talk, he don't need that much. Hit a couple threes. I don't want him to shoot a lot of threes. Shoot a couple threes. Stick to the mid-range. Dude, he's there.
Man, Tommy Shepard, somebody needs to find that guy.
He's there, man.
Hey, he's talking about we want to develop Denny, so we had to get rid of one of them. Man. Get out of here, man.
He chose the right one.
Stupid, bro.
He made so many bad choices.
Anyway, that's the past. We're moving on. All
right, man.
And winger we trust.
All right, man. It's part of our HBCU quarter segment. We'll play our interview with CIAA Commissioner Jackie McWilliams after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for Aegis Yiddig. Deuces.
Straight out of ATL. Got young one chopping that thing, baby. Swiss Beats, full surface. Come on.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Ray Jeezy, and we are part of Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com. All right, folks, it's time for HBCU Corner. We have a treat for you. Right now, we have the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association, the CIAA Commissioner, Commissioner Jackie McWilliams. Hello, Commissioner McWilliams, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene. And welcome to the Urban Sports Scene with HBCU Corner.
Wow, pleasure to be with you both. What an honor to be a part of this. You've had some great esteemed guests in the past, so thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I see you've done your homework, right?
I know, I can tell.
So we did ours as well, and I know this is about the CIAA, but like us, you got MEAC ties. And my man here, he loves having his homecoming. So we want you to share a little bit about that experience, because that's something that's legendary for my friend Wole Lakehead.
This is so true.
Well, look, this is the thing. No matter what HBCU you went to, no matter what homecoming you go to, it is part of the experience that everybody, mm-hmm. everyone's going to say their homecoming is better than the other, mm-hmm. right? But I think your connection to that homecoming based on it being your home, mm-hmm. that's what makes it special. That's what makes it better for you, because it's the experience you have with the people that you went to school with. It's a community yeah. you kind of, you know, became an adult in. And so, you know, but we always love to visit other institutions' homecoming. But for me, Hampton University homecoming, which was a CIAA school before they went to the NEAC, and now they're in a different conference. But that's the place where I learned to be the best version of myself and to be the best student athlete I could be with some of the amazing individuals, and to see individuals that I could actually be one day, doctors and commissioners. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so, you know, that's the experience you have. And homecoming reminds you of where we came from, honestly. It gives you that ground. It's weird, though, because when you go back to homecoming, everybody looks like they're like 12, right? The young you're like, dang, did I look like that when I was in college? Probably.
No, so true. So true.
So if you could have asked your younger self back then, I'm going to be the CIAA commissioner one day, would you have said, yeah, I can see that for myself? Mm-hmm.
You know what? I probably would have been like, ooh, what is the CIAA commissioner? Like, what does that mean? I mean, honestly, you know, when you ask kids now or young people who are student athletes, you know, some of them, big conferences, they'll say, you know, I want to play in the ACC, or I want to play in the, I wanted just to play at Hampton. I didn't know about CIAA. I didn't really know about SWAC, even though my family went to Jackson State Southern, Alabama State. So we got, but I didn't connect what SWAC meant, right? Mm-hmm. If you know, it's a brand and you connect it to events, you don't necessarily connect it to the total experience of championships. So, yeah, I think, you know, if somebody would have said that, I probably would have been curious, like, ooh, what does this mean? And maybe I would have thought differently, but I'm glad that, you know, I had a chance to know that commissioner, or at least know who would see him. He was the first full-time commissioner, Bob Mormon of the CIAA. So that was my commissioner as a student athlete. And I just remember having a really great experience as a student athlete. So, you know, when I took this position, I always thought about my experience when I played when he was the commissioner. And I always heard people say that he was so focused on the student athlete. So, and everything that he did, even his family said it was surrounded by student athlete experience. And so I think I strive to do the same. And so, yeah, maybe if somebody would say, you could be the next commissioner, I'd be like, what do they do? And if Sonia, my sister at the MEAC, says, we commission. That's what commissioners do. We commission.
Well, you do a good job of commissioning then. You do a good job of commissioning.
There we go.
You know, and it's okay. I thought Hillman College was a real HBCU for a long time. So
I think we all do. I think we all did.
So, Commissioner, also, I mean, you mentioned like you play ball at Hamptons. Who was like the team when you played ball, the team that you loved to play against at that time?
Oh my gosh, we had so many rivalries. And by the way, my team was inducted into the CIAA Hall of Fame this past year.
Awesome.
And also in the same year, I think it was in March, we got inducted into the Hampton Hall of Fame. We've been acknowledged because we, as the 1988 Division II National Championship team, but not be inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it's really special because all 17 of the players, all of us are accounted for, all the coaches are accounted for, all the support of the team is accounted for. And to be together, I got goosebumps thinking about it. But when I think about the teams that we play, like we were 33-1 my freshman year. And we lost. We never won the CIAA tournament. So I never won a CIAA basketball tournament. I won a volleyball tournament, too, but not a basketball tournament. And so what you know, to win a CIAA basketball tournament is like having ownership of the basketball national championship of the year, right? So we didn't win. And the team that we lost to was Virginia State in the CIAA basketball tournament. And then when we got in the first rounds of the playoffs, we beat them by like 20 something points, something crazy. And we went hard and won the national championship. And Norfolk State was our other rival. So CIAA, to me, anytime you play, like, they're all rivals, but, you know, the home by the sea against a Norfolk State, like, that's a battle. That's the battle of the bays for real in any sport. And then, you know, Virginia State, I think that rivalry has always been big too. Anything that's close to you within an hour and a half is always your rivalry. So Elizabeth City wasn't far, but for Hampton, I would say Norfolk State, Virginia State, to me, was our big, for me as an athlete, I thought, like, you needed to be ready to ball to play them sisters, because they ball. Norfolk State women, Virginia State women, I mean, and I still know some of them. I see them, like, just by chance, you know, whether it's at the tournament or here in Richmond. I ran into one of the coaches just at the Wawa one day, and I was like, you know, so but we all recognize how talented during that time, how these women played the game, and there was always a level of respect for how we played. But when we played, we went hard. I can remember, like, you know, our team coming off the bench to fight in Norfolk State. I did it because I was like, them sisters are big. Like, I can hold myself together, but I'm trying to get in the game. I ain't trying to, like, be out of the game. So I do my place to stay on the side. Not that I wouldn't tell you, I'm just saying.
I got you.
Freshman, we let the big girls handle the big
Oh,
girls.
I know that. I know that's right. So you mentioned this CIAA basketball tournament. It's one of the biggest events in HBCU sports, period. It moved to Baltimore after several years in North Carolina. How has the Baltimore experience been so far? How has the Baltimore experience been so far?
It's been a charm. I mean, it's a charm city.
Charm city. I like what you did there. I like what you did
there. It's like, as the mayor would say, it's like crabs in Obey. Like, we have been able to find a rhythm together by making impact culturally, just figuring out what the gaps are and closing those. I mean, after our first year, and I think people forget, like, we came out of COVID and trying to run the tournament. So Al Hutchison, who's the president of Visit Baltimore, we just said, look, if we can get the teams in the venue and make sure people are safe, then everything else will happen. And so I think being intentional in a city about what's most important to you, and that's the people. And if you are intentional about serving and making sure that the people are safe through public safety, making sure that the fans are safe in the venues and that the experience in the venue is great and that you give the best experience you can get in our event, if you take care of that, then the numbers will happen. And so, you know, this year we announced last week, our economic impact was close to $30 million in the second year. And that's what moving to digital tickets, where everybody's like, oh my God, digital. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, nobody prints tickets anymore, people. So at the CIAA, you know, that's a big transition, even though the rest of the world has already done it. There's just something about our conference and tournament. When we make a shift and change, our fans sometimes just freak out. But I think once they get into it, they recognize that it's probably the best business decision for us to manage expectations. So it's great. Baltimore is a wonderful city. I worked at Morgan State before, so I lived there. And, you know, I love, like, going downtown. I love urban cities, period. I just like seeing us and the cultural aspect. I love going to the restaurants and we're serving. I love going into the hotel. I'm being greeted by people who look like me, the general managers or leaders. I mean, so it's a very diverse connection and you never feel like you're not welcome. And I think Baltimore the first year was not really clear. And I kept saying, y'all not gonna be ready. And they weren't completely. Restaurants weren't open late. You know, transportation was kind of bottled up. And in the second year, they did exactly what we needed them to do. And people came, and we still have work to do, but I'm excited about working with them. We extended through 2026, which is, you know, something that I would say debated about earlier. We just said, let's get the 2-year extension and then evaluate how we do this year and make sure that both parties are feeling good about the partnership.
How big was it to have the support of the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore?
I mean, it's everything. But you know what? It's everything. It was, we had the support of the governor before Governor Moore, just in a different way, the financial commitment to visit Baltimore. I mean, this is a $3.5 to $4 million commitment and investment by the city and the state in order to help us deliver everything from venues to programming, locally programming, nationally, whatever it is that we're doing. I mean, it's a partnership. So when you have the state involved, meaning even them putting in the liquor license, you know, not a lot of events do that, right? And that was very intentional to make sure that we could at least control and understand who was coming in the city, and that those event holders would also be returning back to a conference that allows them to be in the footprint. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big deal. You know, the business, the minority Black women business enterprise, I mean, there's about a million and one spend opportunity, I mean, that they have, that they were able to aggregate. And so that is state, local, region, DMV area, but mostly city of Baltimore. And that partnership means everyone. Governor Moore is a delight. The mayor is a delight. And the community has been committed to making sure that we can run this tournament. I think we all see the benefits, right? So when they win, we win. But the city wins. The community wins. The impact, I mean, we gave 500 pairs of shoes to a middle school for our Samaritan's Feet partnership and distribution. We gave out just recently, the Panhellenic groups gave about, I think it was over 1,000 blankets or something. They gathered that for the homeless. And so, I, you know, community to me is important. And so whatever we do, we have to leave footprints. We can't just go in a city and take all this $3.5, $4 million that they're investing in marketing and venues and programming. But we need to be able to make sure that we're returning something back when we leave the city each year.
So, also, Commissioner, do you ever see yourself or, you know, the tournament moving back to North Carolina?
I think the tournament can move wherever city brings in the investment and sees value. I mean, I think wherever we go, whether it's, you know, Baltimore, or we've been in Richmond, we've been in Greensboro, we've been in Winston-Salem, we've been in Durham, we've been in Norfolk, we've been in Hampton. If you just track the history, the tournament has grown so much since all of those years. Even when I played in Norfolk Scope and I played in Richmond Coliseum. And so, you know, we're in a venue that is absolutely incredible. They've renovated that venue, significant investment. It's bright, it's airy, it's basketball. It's a entertainment venue, but they created a space for it to be a basketball venue. So, you know, I think if there's, when we go out to bid, if the board decides to go out to bid in a few years after we get through this Baltimore deal, it'd be interesting to see what cities are interested in bidding and what they will, what investments, because we have our standards of things that you must do in order to win this tournament. And so my hope is that, again, and it requires state involvement. It requires city involvement. It requires political involvement, investors, private and public sector. And if, unless the board changes the format of the tournament, we have 13 schools now. So we've got we'll have 26 games next year, starting on Monday, ending on Saturday. It's a grind, but there's nothing like watching these young people play their craft. And there's nothing like crowning championships and seeing the tears, blood, and sweat that they give to win a CIAA championship. Elizabeth City women in history have never won the championship. In my lifetime, I don't know if I ever do that, because I know I lost, but I'm just saying, like... Am I bitter? Yeah, kind of.
Is it my bitter kind of?
Yeah, but you know, Elizabeth City, to see Lincoln University women. So you're seeing the parity in this tournament. And, you know, for them to come into a city and feel like they're part of a community, I think that's a big deal for the experience that student athletes should receive.
And my friends who are in big Greek life, they love it in Baltimore. So I'm not, yeah. So I know that. Because we're local, we're closer to Baltimore. I mean, we're in the DMV region of it, but we're close to Baltimore, and they love it. They have, you don't have to drive all the way to North Carolina. They're happy.
I mean, we have a lot of our alumni from our institutions are from the DMV in Northern. I mean, if you just think historically, in back in the day, mm-hmm. I mean, if you couldn't go to school at the University of, or the University of, where'd you mm-hmm. go? You went south to mm-hmm. the institutions that allow Black people to get their education. Yeah, and so right. some stayed and some moved. So I think I'm very clear, as the rest of our board and members, specifically our board, we know the data. We know where our alumni come from. And I think we've been able to aggregate our new demographic of fans by age as well, and not just schools and the footprint, but to really try to get this younger generation involved in the CIAA differently than we have in the past. So it's a lot of work, because we're trying to capture, you know, that newborn baby all the way to that season 55 tournament. You know, I've been here 60 tournaments and I don't want no digital ticket. I'm like, somebody print this man a ticket for me. I get it, sir. I get it. You know, piss me out today.
Yeah, man. Change is hard for people sometimes, man. Change is hard.
The one thing I love about our conference, and maybe it's through my leadership and working with the board, that we are empathetic to that. We yes. know that. Mm. You know, I have to think about myself, because maybe one day I'll be that way. Right now, I'm all in the digital space. Show me where the app is. Like, I want easy access.
Yeah.
But who knows what it will look like 20 years ago when I go to the tournament and you tell me I have to do something else. I got to, like, scan my eyes or something. Like, what? You know, so I just think we all have to be thoughtful about what the trends will be, and how do we integrate, you know, the new generation into that. But we don't leave out the past. Because I'm dealing with the past, the present, and the future. And so I think strategically, I'm always thinking about how to make sure that we do that in a way that's thoughtful and it's empathetic. And sometimes we win at it, sometimes we don't.
That's kind of a good segue, because we want to ask you about working with the other HBCU conferences. You mentioned Commissioner Stills earlier. We just had Commissioner Holloman on as well. And everybody's excited about this partnership and how it factors in terms of strategy and growing, you know, each HBCU conference moving forward. And what's your perspective on that, and how will that positively impact the CIAA?
Yeah, for me, it's like a dream. You know, it's like the reality of what I've always thought about, that we are better together. They would call me the god sister of the group. I'm like, y'all making me feel like I'm the aged out one, which is not fair. But if you think about the four commissioners, I've been here 11, it'll be 11 years. I've been finishing 10 years, but finishing 11 on September 4th. And McClellan is finishing up maybe his third or fourth year. Sonia finishing one and or going on her second year, and Holloman his 1 year. So probably out of all of them, you know, I've worked in the national office. I've worked Division I. I've done championships. I've been in the infrastructure, and some of them have been as well. And so I think maybe the knowledge base of being, you know, in as a commissioner, but been in college athletics for 30 years and very intentional about serving the way that I have. It's probably helpful that I'm able to help guide some of our conversation and what they bring. We're extremely powerful. We're like four power. We call ourselves the four power, you know, conferences. And I think there's such great opportunity to identify those things that really work collectively together, without losing the things that we're doing individually for our conferences. So it's exciting. We meet once a month. We're always listening. If everybody has an HBCU presentation or, you know, want an opportunity, I think we're very thoughtful about what those partnerships look like. We can agree. If one doesn't agree that we should partner, none of us will agree. We all stay collectively connected in that way so that it makes sense on what we're doing. I think the collaboration for our student athletes, and, you know, whether SIAC and SWAC are doing something because of the location, CIAA and MEAC are doing something, or we're all doing something at the Celebration Bowl, or CIAA and SIAC are thinking about how to relive and revive our Pioneer Bowl, and, you know, what partners can help us do that? What makes sense? You know, I think there's a lot of good conversation. And I think you guys will continue to see some growth on what we can do collectively together. And we're doing some stuff. We just have to share the stories a little bit better. It's fun.
So also, I mean, and just to jump on that, you know, like, you know, we've seen in terms of PWIs, like the ACC Big Ten tournament or the Big East Big Ten tournament. Could you see yourself having that type of challenge or tournament in terms of basketball? I use basketball as an example, to have something like that for HBCUs.
We'd love to. I mean, and, you know, one of my presidents, Virginia State University President Dr. Abdullah, he's my challenge of thoughts and strategy and opportunities. Like, for him, just blow up everything and everything's HBCUs. But we know we're members of the NCAA and that we have Division I, Division II. So we have to be thoughtful. Our schedule is very different than theirs. So if we did a challenge, what does that look like? Because they might be able to start early. We can't because of the Division II life and the balance philosophy. They get distribution. We don't. We raise our money very differently. Not that they don't, but they get a higher distribution from the basketball tournament. We get a smaller one, but the way that it's paid out in Division II is by the number of sponsors, number of institutions you have, not how you win in the championship. So we're very a different makeup from Division I, II, and III. But I do think our conversations around, you know, the opportunities to have a big HBCU event. So interestingly, softball, golf, bowling, we have some of those things that are happening that people don't think about, that we think about basketball and football. But some of our other sports are already doing some collaboration from conferences for all of our conferences for our athletes to compete in. I think softball did like a softball challenge and invited SWAC, SIAC, MEAC schools. And it's awesome to see, right? You get to see that overlay. We've talked about this NIT end of the year. There are some promoters out there. I think that's the challenge for us, right? We like to see it, but having the bandwidth to do it. And if we did it, who does it for us? And how does the revenue work? I mean, so many people want to use our brands, but you got to pay for the brand, right? You got to pay for the marks. And so we have to be thoughtful about those partnerships that we would go in if we agree to do that. And what is the benefit back to us as conferences? And then what is the benefit back to our member institutions? So that's always a tricky part and challenge when you have these large ideas and want to do it. And you've got individuals who want to do it, but you know, you're kind of hesitant because you don't know if they're going to be able to sustain that programming based on sponsors and revenue. Because we've seen that happen and commitments have not been made for our institutions. And we're trying to protect that.
I think a CIAC, CIAA challenge would be dope. I'm just saying, like, in the future, especially in the right location, it would be big.
I think so too.
But I want to ask you, though, amongst HBCU ranks, the CIAA arguably, I want to emphasize the word arguably, is like the most, one of the most popular. What makes the CIAA conference so special, in your opinion?
You know, it's just like, I don't even want to say it, but the Howard Hampton, you know, thing. Howard was founded before Hampton, right? So they say they're the real HU.
They do. I got a friend who went to Howard. She hammers that to me too. Cause I talk like Ray mentions why I love Hampton. So I went to Hampton's homecoming. I just loved it. Just went there and I went to Hampton's homecoming and loved it. So I'm like, Hampton's like the HU, and she gets pissed at me. Like, she gets pissed at me.
And then they get, then they were like, y'all at Hampton Institute.
Okay. Exactly.
So you gotta love it. I mean, but at the end of the day, as I would say, you gotta give them, they were founded before. I mean, but at the end of the day, we're both two amazing campuses and individuals with amazing alumni that come out of our campus. But that rivalry is like, it's a good and bad rivalry at the same time, right? But I don't fall into it. But for the CIAA, you know, we were founded in Washington, D.C. Our founding members were Howard, Hampton, Lincoln, Shaw, Virginia Union. So those are our five. So when you see our logo, our main logo, you'll see the five stars that represents our five founding member institutions. And so we have a piece of, you know, those schools that really made CIAA who it was. And there's a lot of history behind. Shaw was the first HBCU in the South, right? And then you got Hampton in Virginia, Howard. I mean, it's Lincoln, the first degree institution, HBCU degree institution in the North. So when you think about the history and the build out of even the MEAC, that our institutions from the CIAA, that was intentional work to have a Division I representation and Division II in the NCAA. And you've got the breakoff of Morgan that was in Hampton, Maryland Eastern Shore that was, I mean, in the CIAA, South Carolina State, North Carolina A&T, Delaware State, all members of the CIAA. So, and there's history behind there. There are a lot of great athletes that participated in the CIAA that we try to capture, but you know, years have passed and MEAC is the brand for those institutions now. But honestly, CIAA was the start of it all for all HBCU conferences. We were the first. And so what makes it unique is that we were the first. And we get to tell the story of the build out and the breakout of what the first looked like. And it's an important place for a lot of different people. I mean, we're going on 14 years. The tournament is going on 78. The women's tournament is going to 49. And this tournament has meant the world to a lot of people. It's where it birthed NBA players. You know, it birthed opportunities that many of us, the John B. McClendon, who was a part of finding the first basketball tournament in 1946 with four other men. I mean, it's just special. And I think our job is to continue to make sure that people know the history of that. It's not that we're better than anybody. I just think whether I'm here or not, CIAA brand alone makes people have conversations. Right. Oh, my parents went to Shaw, or, you know, or my mama went to Hampton Institute when the CIAC, or, you know, it's, or my great grandma, I didn't go to an HBCU, but my daddy went to North Carolina Central. Right. That's the type of conversations you get around CIAA. And we're able to capture legacy, leadership, and community, our three pillars, through this conference.
Thank you for mentioning UMES because we are UMES alums, so thank you.
Yes, y'all have some history. I think y'all had either a track, we've got your one of your track teams, or is it baseball that's in our Hall of Fame? I mean, that's, or has been submitted. I have to go back and look, but yeah, I mean, there's all of you all of those schools that were a part of the CIAA have a footprint in our family. And once you're in CIAA, you never leave. You might be in MEAC, but you still CIAA.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. We appreciate that. Thank you so much. Steve Ray, we have two conferences. We're awesome.
I'm in three. I'm in CIAA, I'm in the MEAC, and now I'm in CAA. Like, what the heck?
So Commissioner McWilliams, what does being a HBCU commissioner mean to you?
It means everything. I mean, you know, there have been other opportunities, but this was the dream job for me. This was the place that I started. This is the place where I always saw myself ending and helping build and sustain a brand. That was the first. I mean, there's something unique about this conference. We are, you know, not just one of the largest tournaments in the country, but we have like 10 or 11 people on our staff to deliver this tournament and 12 other championships out of basketball. And it's special. I mean, I think there's the cultural relevance for me. Like I work for 13 board for our president every single day that allow me to be the best version of myself. Every day, I'm not micromanaged. They trust me. I built the speed of trust with them to build culture, to deliver everything that they've asked for, working on media rights, strategic planning, you know, our Under Armour BSN deal, you know, to keep the conference financially stable. It wasn't when I got here, to make sure that our student athletes have a great experience. And you know, I don't have to worry or wake up every day wondering if I'm going to be received or accepted because I'm a female commissioner and I'm a Black commissioner. I just get to be who I am, and that's a leader, and that's a servant leader. And so it's exciting to be a part of an organization where I can live out my mission and passion every single day in college athletics. It's sport. Like, I'm not a brain surgeon. My daughter's in a medical camp right now at Georgetown, right? And she wants to be a doctor. And I'm like, I am not trying to cut nobody. I just want to see some good athletes play, graduate, and go. Like, I think about Josh Williams, you know, that played, that's at Fayetteville State.
Kansas City. And Kansas City now. It went Super Bowl.
There's a chance. They finally won the CIAA championship after being in it 5 years. And this brother, I mean, I've watched seniors. I've watched them, you know, over the 10, 11 years I've been here, championships I've seen. I've watched these young people graduate and move on. So it's almost like, you know, I can be really proud about the things that we have accomplished as a team to give them that experience and make sure that they're in position with their institution to have that exposure, you know, to have a partnership with NFL and to have that combine or that legacy all-star game that they do in New Orleans. That opened up the door for a lot of our, and that's the kind of work that our partnership with the other three conferences, that's what we're doing. We're making sure that we're collaborating and getting the best exposure that we can for our student athletes.
Well, we definitely appreciate you having you on. I mean, you've already went over the time that Ali was allocated to us.
And I love to talk.
We do appreciate that. No, we appreciate that because I was scared like 15 minutes, but hey, she's going. We're going to go.
Because you got a busy schedule.
I know. We know.
I do.
But before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would just add that, when you think about our HBCUs and you think about our conferences, we are more than what people know us to be. Like SWAC is not just football. CIAA is not just basketball. MEAC is not just basketball and football. And SIAC is not just football. Like we are a total experience of brands to support the HBCU communities. And some, you know, you don't have to go around us. Come to us and engage conferences in a way where we can support things to really enhance and amplify our brands and the experiences for our student athletes. But, you know, most of us, where football or basketball is our primary revenue source, which it is for CIAA, you know, we've got to sell tickets. And you'll see a lot of that this year in our promotions. I told my team, I don't talk about anything else. It's tickets, 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 tickets. But we're going to do a community event. How are we selling tickets? You know, we're going to do... So we're giving back, but we need alumni and fans to give back too. So if you want great experiences, you know, if you come to Baltimore, just don't go to the party. Like, come party in the venue with us and share the experience for the student athletes. I guarantee you'll have a great time in the venue if you come. But make that total experience a part of buying a ticket and making sure that we can give back more to our student athletes and our membership when you do that, because the resources, that's what it's for. We're all nonprofits. I think people think we're for profit. No, we're not. We're nonprofits. And so we have to raise our money specifically in Division II in a way to deliver product every single day. And so our partnerships with Van Wagner and all of our sponsors, you know, Nationwide and Food Lion, I'm giving them all plugs because they've been with us 25 years plus. And it's hard to sustain partners and who want to give into your scholarship fund and who want to deliver at your championships. And so it's important to have those partners. But it's also important to have your fan of alumni give back to your institutions and then give back to those events that give back to your institution. So it's a collaborative community effort in HBCU. So while we're wearing our HBCU stuff, are you really giving back? Are you really making, you know, UMES as alumni better than you left it because you got something from there? And that's what we should all be doing. And I give back to Hampton every single year. I give back in the scholarship fund. And I have a scholarship fund at the Temple University from a graduate there. So if you're an HBCU a graduate, and you want to go to grad school, I'm encouraging you to go to Temple and get and apply for the Jacqueline McWilliams Scholarship Fund to help support you. Those are the things that we should do as we're trying to give back and build our own legacy as well every single day. It's important.
Thanks for being on HBCU Corner. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
You're helping us complete the mission of getting all the commissioners on this pod. So we thank you so much. Hey, Ray, it's the truth, man. We got to be on
awesome.
The mission.
You should have all four of us on at one time.
Oh, you know what? Ray.
Scheduling.
Scheduling is hard, but we're going to try to make this happen.
You can make it happen.
Well, thanks again. I know you're busy. We appreciate you making time for us. We really do.
Thank you. You guys be well. Have a great summer.
Have a great one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.